Hi, and welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast, where we talk about all things flute and answer your questions live on YouTube. If you want to help us out, be sure to subscribe to our channel and add us to your podcast feed over on iTunes or Google Play. And if you want to represent TFC, head over to our merch store for t-shirts, stickers, mugs, and posters. You can go to designbyhumans.com/shop/theflutechannel. Finally, if you're looking into buying a new flute, be sure to check out the Flute Center of New York at flutesforsale.com. With our code TFC at checkout, you'll be able to try up to 3 flutes or piccolos, and whichever instrument you choose, you get an extended 18-month warranty on it. So be sure at checkout to put in the special code TFC at flutesforsale.com. Now on with the show.
Hey everybody, welcome to Flute Talk Podcast. I'm Nick.
And I'm Emily.
How's it going, Emily?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. So we'll start off with some questions today. There was a really good question here from our most recent video about finger position for flute. And also, if you guys have any questions in the live chat, be sure to ask them in the chat, and we'll be sure to answer some of those questions as well. So we'll go to Cynthia Salatino. She mentioned that she uses the thumb horn. She likes using it as well. It really jump-started her learning and eliminated the frustration of the flute body turning in. That happens sometimes, when the body, it just falls out of your hands,
Or it turns inwards.
Yeah, inwards, right.
Because the rod is heavier, so it tends to turn towards you. Yeah.
And then she says, what should we do to train our fingers to move faster? Fast fingers. Been a finger theme past couple episodes
on the channel. A lot of people ask about fingers. I think it's all about, when you play the flute, it's about transitioning from a note to another. So I think exercises like in Tafanel and Gobert, the first exercise that goes like this. And go on, like it goes on like that, because it's a repetition of notes. So this way, your brain can you have those words, if you may say, those little chunks of notes that come often in music. That you repeat many times so that they go in your long-term memory in terms of muscle memory, And I think it's more muscle memory than anything else, because everyone's fingers can move fast. Like, once you know that, don't raise your fingers too high for no reason, because you're covering more distance. If you do that, then it slows you down. And all those things we said about, rotation of the arm and all those things. I think it's also about muscle memory. So maybe exercises that train that. And maybe you better do less, but really repeat it until it becomes super easy. And then do another one. Let's say you work on a GR and you do... For 1 week, for a few days, you only do starting on D until you're comfortable, and then you go E flat, or you do a couple, but you don't have to do the whole 2 pages. You try to raise the tempo, and repetition is the key, I think, to develop muscle memory, because you have your long-term memory and your short-term memory. Short-term memory has, 7 items? Put in approximately. Long-term is unlimited, but you have to repeat to put in there. Personally, I have it's almost a nervous tick. I do fingerings almost all the time. Since I was...
Right, forever.
Well, yeah, since I've been playing the flute. When I was little, my mom would always say, like, what are you playing right now? Because she would talk to me and see my fingers moving. So I kind of, I play music in my head and I do the fingerings while I do other stuff. But it's not a conscious thing. But I think when I was younger, I lived in the countryside and I had to do a lot of bus to go to the school. And I thought that was lost time.
Right.
So I think I started doing that in the bus so I didn't lose all that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it does help because you don't need a lot of strength in your fingers to play the flute. So all those things about strengthening their, I don't think it's it's not a movement that you're doing in flute. No finger is going back to your to your thumb.
No.
So I don't see why. Why do you need strong fingers? I don't see why either. Because it's what, a few grams? Not even. Not is even. It a gram? You know, it's
each key. The amount key of force you need. Yeah, not much force.
Yeah, keys. Especially you don't need well press on this.
Yeah, if it's well maintained and regulated keys, they're very light.
Personally, I like light. Light mechanism. That's
right.
And the technician knows that. Our technician, right. And she puts it light. Uh-huh. So I think it's a lot about transitioning from a note to another. So you have to work on these things slowly, fast, uh-huh. change the rhythm, uh-huh. just play it.
Yeah, play it over and over.
And it's better to do it many times than try to do it 6 hours in a row, you know?
Uh-huh.
Better do 10 minutes.
Right.
Many times in the week, you know,
uh-huh.
and this way your brain will get accustomed to it, you know. Also, when you have a tough passage in a piece, you know, practice that uh-huh. little passage as a technique exercise.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a way to do it. Keep your fingers close and.
I'm just gonna machine through these questions. Some of these questions are very similar, like. What type of flutes do we like? Like Gemeinhardt, Miyazawa, Jupiter. You know, I think those are all well. I think they're all well built flutes. The flute craftsmanship so high now. The thing is, they have to try so many flutes before you buy one. Don't just try one and be like, "This is the one." More or less likely, might not be. You want to try a bunch and compare. I think.
Yeah.
And your price and your budget, all those types of things. It's such a general question. There was a good one here as well by Yannick Bernier. He says, when I play the ocarina to play high notes, sometimes I bend the ocarina close to my chest to make it clear note. Does this technique, is this technique also used on flute?
No.
I don't think so.
No. If you want to play higher, you just... use air speed and angle of the air.
Right.
I guess what he does kind of is changing the angle of the air. So in a way, yes, but we don't do it by moving the flute.
No. Yeah.
We just change the angle in another way.
What up, pup? He wants to know. He's planning on having lessons with another teacher and maybe have a co-teacher. In the future, what are your thoughts on this idea? Is it insulting for my first teacher? That's a very good question. Because a lot of people are always... In my history of flute playing, like a lot of people are scared of taking a lesson behind their teacher's back.
The thing is, you shouldn't have to do it in someone's back because people shouldn't be so...
Right.
I don't know. You're not a married couple, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like you're cheating on someone. No,
getting another interpretation, getting another way of...
I think in a way it also depends on your level. If you have two teachers that contradict each other and you're a beginner, it can be confusing.
Right.
Maybe you want to pick the one that you're most comfortable with, the one mm-hmm. that explains things more clearly, make you feel better, whatever your criterias are. But... if you're a bit more advanced, you might want to have a teacher, and then maybe you find another teacher that's amazing at working on sound or orchestral excerpt, and your teacher's better with the repertoire, or you know, and that's totally fine. And I don't know why we're so protective of our students, and so I had a teacher like that at one point who didn't want us to take lessons with other people. Personally, I think she had some self-confidence issues, you know? She was scared that we would realize she wasn't... but, you know, you can't be everything to someone. But, yeah, some people will be insulted. And I would say it depends on the level. What do you think?
Yeah. I agree.
Because if you start and one teacher is saying, do this with your fingers, the other one, do that, and then you want to please everyone,
oh my gosh,
you're stuck in the middle, you add stress to your life that maybe you don't need.
Yeah. I think if possible, you communicate with your teacher. Most, I would say maybe 9 times out of 10, I hope that the teacher would be like, yeah, sure, go and take a lesson with somebody.
Oh, I had a teacher who was such an amazing person and so, you know, confident in what he had to offer and also know what his strengths and were and what were not his strengths. And he was amazing at, he still is amazing at contemporary music. But whenever I wanted to do excerpts, he would say, go see that lady. She's way better than me at that. So it should even come from the teacher sometimes, maybe, to be like, hey, you should take a lesson with this person. She could help with your sound, or he could help with your excerpts, or that would be in the best world, you know, if people were comfortable with themselves enough to not feel threatened by other people, I guess.
So hopefully that answers the question. I wouldn't mind if somebody asked me, oh, I'm going to have a lesson with Lily. I'm like, okay, go have a lesson with them. See what's, get different perspectives.
Yeah, but doing that on a regular basis, like, it's one thing to go for a summer thing. And it's one thing to take, to have two teachers that might contradict each other. And, like, really, it's a different thing there. To have a, just saying.
Hannah Willis is wondering, they want to play piccolo. What piccolo is a good piccolo? I would say there's Yamaha piccolos that are very good. If you're using it for like marching band and stuff like that, I would try to find a plastic one or like plastic resin or a metal piccolo if you're doing marching band, like you're running outside and stuff. But if you're mostly inside, the Yamaha makes good piccolos.
Didn't we try some Gemeinhardts at one?
Yeah. There's a video we made on the channel that three piccolos of different budgets and a Dizal piccolo too. All very good piccolos. Good. Yeah.
For the Dizal, was it made with resin? I think so.
Yeah. A resin just means it's like made out of plastic a bit. Like it's a combination.
So it's more. Solid in a way. Like if you play outside, and
it's
stuff
less
like
prone
that.
To crack and stuff like that. Yeah.
But I have my piccolo for a long time. It never cracked.
Yeah, that happened. That can happen too. The wood could be a very solid cut and it's fine and you took good care of it probably.
Yeah.
You have to be careful with the humidity and going to different places.
I don't I'm not that careful. Lucky, I guess.
Yes, we both play the flute. We're both flutists, yes. Somebody was also saying about what is the big difference of the Breuger system on Brannan flutes? I know you played on two Brannan flutes recently. Mm-hmm. Did you notice a difference with the mechanism? Because what it is actually it's less metal in
it's the one rods. Rod.
It's one rod, yeah. And then there's like a hybrid version that Miyazawa made that's 1.5 rods or whatever. And,
Does that mean less friction?
Less friction, less maintenance. It means less maintenance.
So it can go faster.
It can go quicker, yeah. The response time is a bit faster. And, so that's really a main difference. People correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's about it for that.
I thought it was a very nice flute to play on.
Yeah.
It was easier,
right?
I guess. But, yeah, it's not that easy to know what you're playing on the spot. I would be curious to close my eyes and play different flutes and see if I can really tell the difference. Like some sommelier did with wines and it's not that easy.
If you guys have any more questions, we'll answer them in the comments or we'll answer them from the comments. We're just gonna see what else there is. Yeah, I know in one of the comments we had recently, there was a good one about
pain in the left index finger.
Yeah, pain in the left index finger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got some pain on my left index finger, the part that contacts with the flute. Yeah. That's this thing here.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I feel the skin start to thicken in the same spot on my right hand. Am I doing something wrong? And that's Sigurd the Mizar.
Maybe he's pushing too hard.
Yeah, he might be pushing too hard. That's a big tendency for flutists. It's that left hand stuff.
And maybe what could happen to his pain in the chin, in the jaw, if you also push too hard.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
There are also gels that you can buy. They're called flute gels that you can put on the flute there in that little finger right there, and you can give a little padding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe instead of feeling, instead of thinking of pulling towards yourself or pushing on the flute, maybe you just think as this fulcrum point as a balance thing. So you balance and there's a pushing forward with the right arm, but here it's just holding it, you know. And then the other point is here, but here it's just, you know, balancing the whole flute, but not really pushing towards you. So you use less energy and you will have less pain, probably. Maybe try that, see if you understand what I mean.
Yeah,
but
yeah, exactly.
It's all about feeling it, you know. It's not just it's not just an intellectual thing. It's really to feel, oh, okay, this is just a balance on that finger.
Exactly. Hannah wonders, do you have any tips for trills?
Well, yeah, as I said in the video about our last video about
fingers.
I talk about
it's a pretty in-depth video. If you haven't seen it, you should definitely check it out after the podcast.
Yeah, I talk about rotation. So rotation of your whole forearm. So you think of your whole of your fingers, instead of just the fingers working, you think about your whole arm from the elbow to the tip of the finger, and you use that rotation to assist your finger, especially your ring finger. It's going to help a lot. So if you do a trill with D and E. I use my arm and I shake, you know, instead of just moving this finger. If I try to only move the finger, it's very slow.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a big range of motion.
Would you
also, another thing is the finger you're moving, just, and I didn't say that in the other video, but I remember that now. The finger next to the finger you're moving, if you press it a little bit harder, it will help going faster, because it also helps rotating, because it's kind of your fulcrum point to your rotation.
Rotation.
So let's say I do E and F sharp. I'll press a little bit harder on my ring, on my middle finger, so I can. So that becomes like where I sit, you know. This one is like the weight is there, and then this one is just moving very fast. So it's really a shaking
thing.
So
how would you practice that? And when you think of trills, do you think of trills in groupings of how you trill? Or is it just play as fast as you can?
Personally, I play as fast as I can. But what I really focus on is the ending of the trill. Because the ending is the most difficult part.
The ending of it, okay.
For me.
That's very interesting.
Because for me, moving a finger fast, blah, 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 it's not that easy. But ending it well is a tough part. So when do I end it? And then what do I do with it? If I go... So I have to end on the D, then go ta da da C D C. So I don't really think about the moving part. I just shake it and then I go ta da da da. So that's how I do it. Just move, stop, ta ta ta. So I really work more. I focus more on my endings of trills than what's in the middle.
Well, how would you do C and D? You know, as a trill, you know, there's that trick fingering. A lot of people, you know, the CD is very, but there's a thing you can use.
But I don't do it like that.
Yeah, that's how you trill. So you trill there. So somebody's wondering how to trill.
It's the little...
The first trill key from left to right, if you look at
between,
it.
Between your index finger and your middle finger, there's a little key there.
Yeah.
And you just use that.
Would you start with the real finger really quickly and then switch that, or always
sometimes
just go,
yeah. Sometimes I go.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. And also sometimes when it's higher notes, I will use a harmonic.
Yeah.
Harmonics. So if it's a high D and high E, I'll do G and A.
Harmonic, yeah.
And but I play the harmonic.
Yeah. And usually when that goes out in the hall, it cleans up right away. It looks, it sounds, for harmonic, sometimes it sounds very weird when you first play it.
Yeah, when you play loud with everything around.
It blends in very well. It blends so, in.
And you can also start like.
Yeah.
You can start with the real fingering and then move it.
Yeah.
And just try to keep the same intonation though, yeah. Because sometimes it can move. So just be careful with that. Just listen to yourself and you'll be fine.
Why does Emily use an inline G? Do you think it's more comfortable?
No, it's just that I started on a flute that was inline.
Uh-huh.
Then I just went on because that's what I'm used to.
Uh-huh.
I think probably offline, offset Gs are better.
It depends how your hands are built, you know.
But for me, I'm very comfortable. Never had pain in that hand. Or in my hands. I never had pain in my hands. I have problems with my neck because I had a bad posture as a teenager. And but that wasn't even really related to the flute. It's just bad posture in general. I had a forward head posture, but I think the flute, I was going towards my flute instead of bringing my flute towards me.
Right.
So that was that made it worse. But my hands, I never had pain in my hands per se. So.
And like I know there's Hubert Laws. He's a very famous jazz flutist. His flute, he actually has an inline A flat. So all the keys are at the very top. So he has that A flat key is actually in the row.
Because maybe he has long fingers.
He has huge fingers. He's a very tall man. So this flute has an extra key. Has extra key there. And he would, instead of doing this little lever here, it's actually another key. Crazy,
yeah?
So it all depends, you know? It all depends on what you're used to,
what you first played on. Yeah. But some people, one of my students, she had an inline and then she switched for offline. She said, it's way better for her.
Yeah, yeah.
So just try things, you know?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It's not better or worse. It's what's best for you, really.
Uh-huh.
Our bodies are different.
Yeah. What are some tips on going from low C sharp to E flat?
Low
C sharp. I don't have a D sharp roller, so it's kind of hard.
Low C sharp.
Yeah.
To D flat?
To E flat.
Oh, like this?
Yeah. So like a slide.
Well, you won't have trills like that.
No.
But we did a little video about that. Yeah. You oil your pinky either on the side of your nose or behind your ear, and then it's going to slide way better.
Also, sometimes. Also, what else might help is putting a plug on the F sharp, because that's where that sound comes from. When you have a little leak, it's actually from your fingers.
Yeah.
You know, it's just how our bodies are made. But a lot of I do that all the time. I put it in there permanently, so I never have that problem.
Yeah.
So you can do several different things to do that, but the wax thing is a good idea. And
if it's a sliding problem, yeah.
But there's
and
no.
And if the problem is just that your finger is moving a little bit and you have a leak, just put a plug there on your ring finger.
Yeah.
And you'll be fine.
Because
some people think that making your life easier is cheating. I don't believe that. The result is what counts. If a plug makes you sound better, what's the problem with that? If a thumb port makes your life easier, what's wrong with that?
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And if you like it, do we tell pianists, oh, you used your pedal and you didn't hold the note, you cheated. You know, the pedal is there for it. But even some pianists say that. Oh, no, you had to. Oh, yeah, there's a pedal there. Why would I strain my fingers, you know? Like those things, it's weird.
It's weird. Yeah.
Is music, it should be just the blueprint and then you make it sound good. Mm-hmm. You find your way to make it sound good.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like,
we shouldn't be just looking at someone trying to figure out what they did to make their lives easier. Just listen. If it sounds good, it's good, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. That's a very good point. Cheyenne Klein, they're having trouble playing high B without their lips buzzing, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips? They're learning the B flat major scale two octaves, and at the high B, their lips are buzzing.
It's either you don't open your lips enough, or you don't have enough air speed or air there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would try to support more, open the lips, and have more air speed there and more air in general. Because if it's buzzing, it means it's close from each other. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to make it buzz to see. Yeah. Open the back of your mouth and really, mm-hmm. and open the hole between your lips. Try to send a lot of air and see if it helps. But also, when you play mm-hmm. higher notes, you need more air speed.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. Another thing, when you play high notes, don't try to reach them over you, but always remember your flute is under you. So always send the air under you. Seems very obvious, but that's what teaching is. It's saying obvious things. Yeah. Because sometimes we visualize those high notes over ourselves, and then we blow up. Changes. It's not the right angle to make it whistle with the flute. Mm-hmm. So, like, the flute is under you, so inside the flute.
So I think we're gonna have one or two more questions, and that'll be it for today. What is your favorite key to play in?
I like D minor a lot.
D minor.
Yeah. What is yours?
G major, I guess.
Yeah.
G major or D major or D? Yeah, D major. D major is better, way way better. And one final question somewhere. Let's see. Chat's been pretty awesome today. It's great. Thanks for staying with us on a Friday night. I know, you know, that's great. That's amazing. It's really, really cool. Now we already knew that one. If you guys have a question, we can answer through the chat. I'll just check right back if there is anything. If not, that's fine. I remember there was one more in the YouTube comments that I... again, slow fingers. Again, like how to, you know...
Finger position, slow fingers, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big thing. People struggle a lot with thumb placement. Oh, yeah, thumb placement, where to put the thumb and stuff. That's the thumb.
I think, you know, it's all about your hand like this. Mm-hmm. When your hand is just natural, your finger is on the left of your
right.
Well, the left of your thumb for your right hand. I'm
for your
saying.
Right hand, yeah.
So your thumb should not be under your. So I see some people playing with the thumb under the middle finger or something like that. It should just be a little bit left to your hand or just under the index finger, but not further right, because then you'll have a lot of pain in the upper part of your thumb, because you're gonna cramp.
Sure, you're cramp. Yeah. Is there anything you want to play? No.
I didn't plan on playing something, but
a lot of people always ask if you wanted to play something. You just had your concert. You just had your concert with the Chaminade.
Yeah, which is really cool. It was amazing. I loved it.
It was a really good concert. People really, really liked how you guys played that. Hopefully, we'll find a recording from it. And
I think there is a recording. Yeah. We should.
And you might even go and record with her, I think, as well.
Maybe. Yeah. I also wanted to record a Chopin with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chopin is true.
Her being my piano teacher for 5 years and my accompanist. So she was both my piano teacher and my accompanist while I was in high school. Well, high school, it's not exactly the same as the United States, but let's just say kind of the same.
Yeah. Oh, people want you to play. That's so funny.
Okay, we can play something.
Okay, well, if you find something. And we'll answer the last two questions. And we'll play, and then I think that'll be it for today. Well, somebody wants to, let's see. Oh, just short something. Doesn't matter, I guess. Yeah.
I was doing some... I was looking through some old paper and...
Yeah.
I stuff to put it away.
What are good pieces for auditions? I don't know. There's a lot of...
It really depends.
Depends where you're auditioning and stuff. They usually give requirements.
Depends if you're... What level you're auditioning for and...
Yeah.
Try to find, I would say, try to find pieces that put you in a good light. Some pieces are very difficult and don't sound difficult. Some pieces are the opposite of that.
Opposite, isn't it? Yeah.
They're easy to learn. Mm. And I would say find some pieces you're in love with, because you're a bit like a salesperson. You have to sell. You have to make people believe that the piece you're playing at that moment is your favorite piece in the world.
Right.
In a way, you're a... You're an actor who's just playing, this is my favorite piece of all time. It's going to be easier to sell it if it's true, or if it's closer to the truth, I guess. Yeah. So someone's saying Syrinx? Yeah, I can do Syrinx. I have it somewhere here.
Yeah, what makes a piece hard? A piece of music could vary in difficulty. Sometimes it could be... The point is not it being difficult. It's just the point is that, like, it's difficult because it's doing things that are not necessarily usual for the player.
Well, maybe not necessarily that. It's also some pieces... And it depends on what are your strengths and your weaknesses. Some pieces might be more difficult for intonation and some for... breathing. Some might have very long phrases and you don't have many places to breathe in. Some might be more technical.
Right.
Some might be a lot of have a lot of piano, and maybe piano is not your best feature. You know, it's all about what is this piece using most, and what are your strengths, and so sometimes we think the most difficult things are playing fast and loud, but playing slowly and long phrases on the flute, it's very difficult too. Okay, so is the microphone well placed for me to play this right now?
You play, it's fine. Okay.
Thank you.
Nice. Everyone likes it. It's very good.
Thank you so much.
Do you have somebody wanted to hear just a tiny bit of contemporary music? Do you know any contemporary technique that's really good? Well, you played a lot of Stockhausen or something, like 5 seconds.
I didn't play that much of Stockhausen, but I played a lot of contemporary music. Well, there's a lot of cool stuff. Next time I could play a contemporary piece, maybe, but there's a lot of stuff. Like, you can do this. Basically, you just don't put your thumb and do move your fingers, you know? That's quite cool, I think. And even in, I think it's in Vox Balene, you do that, but you put your mouth. And you sing like that.
Right.
That's cool. You can also do multiphonics. The easiest one, you play a high D. And you make middle C and the high D. Start by playing them separately, like this. And then you blow in a certain way that makes them both sound at once. So I'm not singing. I'm really just playing both notes with that fingering. That's the easiest multiphonic to play. There are many others that might be a bit more difficult. Some have three notes. So the way to learn them is you do the fingering, and then you play all the notes separately, and then you try to make them sound at once. And yeah, you figure out how to blow them to achieve that. Now, what else is cool? A lot of things are very cool with, like, oh, you can have glissandos like this.
Stuff like that. That's always cool. There's so many.
There's a video of me playing Souvenir de Tadoussac by John Winiers on YouTube, and it's a contemporary piece with a lot of cool flute stuff. You have glissando, you have clicks with your
W-I-N-I-Z-A-R or something like that.
Yeah, W-I-N-I-A-R-Z.
Yeah, there you go.
Winiers. If you write Winiers and
your name,
Amélie Brodeur, my name,
you'll probably find it.
Yeah, or Winiers and Flute.
Winiers and Flute, and it's usually you.
It's called Souvenir de Tadoussac. It's a whale
Someone
thing.
Just found it, yeah. They found it. I'm going to watch it. Oh, no, they found something else, but I know which one, I know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. Yeah, that's it for now. That's let's call that a night. This is the Flute Talk Podcast. If you guys want, we do it every 2 weeks. And just be sure to subscribe to know when we'll be doing them. Usually we try to do at least a couple days before,
and you can click notifications so you can be notified when you have new stuff.
Exactly. You don't just subscribe, but also hit the little bell.
Because I used to think if I subscribed, I would be know everything about the channel. But I realized you need to click notifications so you
get notification of absolutely everything, including live streams. Because when you subscribe, you actually don't know when the live stream is going to be. You have to really search deep and try to find it. But if you have that little notification bell, that really helps.
You'll get
a message for anything we do. And yeah, so we'll talk to you next time. We'll have a new video on Monday. But until then, I'm Nick.
And I'm Amélie.
Thanks, guys. See you guys later. Thank you.